8. Metal tubing held the giant dinner fork a foot or so above a rough slab of concrete. Two basketball-sized stones and a third larger one sat in the sand in front of it, as if some giant had stabbed at them and just missed. A sculpture or an art installation of some kind. Eli walked up to it. Silver paint gave the fork the color and texture of brushed aluminum. He wrapped his knuckles against it and heard a wooden clunk, thick but hollow. He walked around the fork looking for a plaque or an inscription or maybe a small note held in place on the frame with a magnet. Nothing. He turned and looked at the trio of stones. Were they markers? He leaned over the closest one and looked for letters or numbers or symbols of some kind. He heard a click behind him, metal on metal, just loud enough to stand out from the ambient sound of passing cars and the distant lawnmower. The sound probably hadn't made it out of the small park. Eli turned. Harry's long flintlock rifle was a dark circle to his eyes, only recognizable from the way her hands held it. Recognition sparked in her eyes and her glare softened, but not much.
"Mr. Teague?"
"Harry," he said. He let his hands drift out, not up over his head, but plainly open and empty.
"You're early."
"Not as early as I'd hoped," she said.
"What are you doing here?"
"Trying to find you."
"And you have," she said.
She took a few steps toward him, but the rifle didn't shift from his head.
"You'll please pardon my saying, but I find running into you again on the other side of the country a bit disturbing."
"Imagine what it feels like at gunpoint." Her mouth twitched, but the rifle still didn't move.
"How did you find me?"
"Theo," he said. The salesman's surname popped to mind. "Theo Knickerbocker."
"How do you know Theo?"
I went to Quincy Market looking for you and found him. Well, he found me. He tried to sell me a necklace. We talked for a couple minutes and he figured out I was looking for you."
"Did he now?"
"Yeah. He told me you were coming here." The rifle shifted in her hands.
"Theo doesn't just tell people things," she said.
The words were ice. Eli realized she'd wrapped her finger around the trigger.
I paid him," he said. $25 cash. He told me you'd be here now and gave me a bracelet."
He reached for his pocket to pull out the trinket, but stopped as her grip tightened on the rifle. Harry stared at him.
"What were you looking for?"
"What?"
"Just now when I found you, what were you looking for?"
"Nothing," he said. "I was just looking, trying to figure out what you were coming here for." She said nothing. The rifle barrel wavered between a black dot and a blurred, foreshortened rod. "It's pointed at one of my eyes," Eli realized.
"I thought you'd need—"
"Why are you following me, Mr. Teague?"
"To warn you about the faceless man." She took in a fast, short breath.
"When?"
"Just a few days ago. The day after I helped you change the flat tire, he showed up at the bank where I work. He was looking for you, and then he followed me to Boston and killed Theo." The rifle wobbled, the barrel tilted down.
"Theo's dead?"
He shot him in the head."
"And you got away?"
"He was focused on Theo. I got to the edge of the market and ran." Her mouth trembled for a moment.
"Do you have a firearm?"
"A what?"
"A firearm, a gun. A pistol hidden somewhere on your person?"
He shook his head. "No, nothing."
"Excellent."
The rifle came up and became solid again.
"Toward me, please."
"What?" She tipped her head toward the scrub behind the fork and made a small shooing gesture with the rifle's tip.
"This way, quickly, please."
He walked toward and past the large utensil. Her boots shifted in the dirt, swinging her around the fork so it never came between Eli and the rifle. He headed to the edge of the dirt oval and paused at the scrub plants. He glanced right, then left. Past the intersection to his left, the Model A business coupe sat against the curb, the andalusite blue all but black on the tree-shaded street. He leaned his head back.
"You're not really going to shoot me, are you?"
"Don't be daft, Mr. Teague. Do you have the time?"
He glanced at his watch.
"It's almost 1:30.
"How close?"
He looked again.
1:27.
He looked over his shoulder.
"What happens at 1:30?
She stood a few feet away. Her aim had relaxed and she stared up at the fork. She looked at him, then passed him to the scrub.
"Close enough,"
she muttered.
"See the fork's shadow, the top of it?"
He looked down at the scrub. His own shadow was a dark blob across the tan and green plants, but the fork's long shadow reached past him. Its edge sat almost a yard into the growth.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, I do.
Dig there.
What?
Dig,
she repeated. He stepped toward the shadow's edge and the plants crunched under his feet. A few stronger branches scraped at his ankles. He moved to the side, double-checked the fork's shadow, and kneeled. One of his hands pushed into the low bushes. The brown leaves scraped at his fingers and palm. He glanced back at Harry.
Dig.
The words had more emphasis this time. What for?
Because I have a rifle and you don't. No, I mean, what am I digging for? Am I just making a hole? Or just dig, Mr. Teague. You'll know when you find it.
He looked at the rifle, then her, then back to the muzzle.
I don't suppose you could...
If what you say is true, we don't have a lot of time,
she told him.
It's best if you just keep your mind to the task at hand so we can both be gone before anyone finds us here. Dig.
He sighed and set both hands to work. He pushed the low branches and leaves out of the way. They moved without effort, lifting up and folding back. Two or three of the plants had been snapped off and left in the tangle of branches. A rough circle of dirt beneath them was dark and loose. He could see parallel trails where someone had run their fingers back and forth to smooth the ground. He held back the scrub with one hand while the other pawed at the ground. The soil came up easily. It felt like digging at the beach, although the grains felt larger and coarser. He went down a few inches, then clawed at the sides of his hole to widen it. The ground there resisted, reinforced by a web of thread-like roots. Another group of cars drove by, and Eli wondered if anyone saw the woman holding him at rifle point. No one called out or honked horns. Wasn't Los Angeles supposed to be all about guns and drive-by shootings? Did they not notice or just not care? He hadn't even dug for 2 minutes when his fingers brushed something smooth and angled 8 inches down. They found the shape again and pulled it from its tiny grave. He flipped it over in his hand, and a few quick swipes knocked most of the dirt from it. This it? He asked Harry. The soil hadn't even stained the little packet of wax paper. It had been cleverly folded into a square envelope, maybe 3 inches on each side. Through the tacky paper, Eli could feel something round, maybe the size of a half dollar, although the packet seemed too light for a... Harry snatched it from his fingers. She tugged on one of the folds and the packet bloomed like a paper flower in her hand. She plucked something from the center and closed her fist around it. She murmured something Eli couldn't hear and let out a deep sigh. The rifle lowered and drifted to the side. Eli stood up and coughed. So what is it? She glanced at him.
Thank you for the warning, Mr. Teague, she said. You have my appreciation, although I'm sorry you came all this way for nothing.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means you should run back home as fast as you can. Forget you were here, forget you saw me, go back to your life and be thankful for it. Forget...
He shook his head.
What the hell is going on? You have, if I understand the phrase correctly, jumped into the deep end of the pool. You should go home now while you can. They haven't directly connected you to me. You're just a witness.
Like Theo was?
Theo'd been playing the odds for a while. It won't be the same for you.
She waved the rifle and the movement made her ponytail swing out from behind her head.
Go.
They both heard the growl at the same time. A rumbling engine that stood out even over the SUVs and sports cars rolling past the traffic island. The sound came from the bend to the south, echoing off the houses.
Run,
Harry whispered. She shoved the mystery item inside her jacket. The rifle came back up.
Run now. What about you?
The growl rose and became a roar. Eli glanced to the side and saw people in the passing cars glancing at their dashboards, then out to the streets.
Mr. Teague, this is no time for chivalry or nobility. Please, you need to get away from here as fast as you can. Run until you drop and then keep crawling.
I'm not going to just leave you to deal with...
The Hudson Hornet ignored the stoplight and shot through the intersection. The black, glossy finish reflected the sky and the sun and the other cars. The roadster aimed itself at Eli and Harry.
Damn it,
said Harry. She backed into him, forced him around the fork. The moment slowed in time. The Hornet's tires were already up on the island. The driver's side of the car plowed through one of the pointy bushes. Grit sprayed up from the other tire. Eli saw the faceless man behind the wheel. The plastic mask gazed back at him. Harry's rifle went off. The Hornet's passenger side tire exploded. The car lurched to the side, crushing two more pointy bushes under its bulk before the driver could compensate. The Hornet slid into the dirt oval and came to rest. The passenger door sat just a few feet from the concrete base of the fork.
"I'm sorry," said Eli. "I don't know how he followed me here."
The driver's door opened and the faceless man rose up out of the car. His clear mask now had round cheeks and a wide cartoon smile like a clown. He had changed his suit, too. The deep blue pinstripe made him look thinner, and a silk handkerchief poked out from the breast pocket. A tiny gray tuft rode on one side of the hat tucked into the band. It was an old man's hat, or a hat young men wore in old pictures.
"He isn't following you," Harry said.
She swung the rifle up, aiming at the sky, and then pushed it into Eli's hands.
"This is the one that's been after me."